Over the next few weeks, Louisa saw him only once, and at a distance. She was halfway up the staircase on her way to Gertruda's room, when a footman opened the doors to the banquet room, and Meneer van Ritter's led out a procession of his guests. They were all beautifully dressed, prosperous-looking ladies and gentlemen. Louisa knew at least four of the men were members of Het 17, the directors of the VOC. They had obviously dined well and were jovial and noisy. She hid behind the curtains as they passed below her, but she watched Meneer van Ritter's with a strange feeling of longing. He was wearing a long, curled wig, and the sash and the star of the Order of the Golden Fleece. He was magnificent. Louisa felt a rare flash of hatred for the smiling, elegant woman on his arm. After they had passed her hiding place, she ran to the room she shared with Gertruda, threw herself on the bed and wept. "Why does he not want to see me again? Did I displease him?" She thought about the incident in the library every day, especially after the lantern was out and she was in her bed across the room from Gertruda. Then one day Meneer van Ritter's arrived unexpectedly at the riding academy. Louisa had taught Gertruda how to curtsy. She was awkward and clumsy, and Louisa had to help her back onto her feet when she lost her balance. But van Ritter's smiled a little at this accomplishment and returned the courtesy with a playful bow. "Your devoted servant," he said, and Gertruda giggled. He did not speak directly to Louisa, and she knew better than to address him uninvited. He watched Gertruda make a circuit of the ring on the lead rein. Louisa had to walk beside the pony, and Gertruda's pudding face was screwed up with terror. Then van Ritter's left as abruptly as he had appeared. Another week passed, and Louisa was torn with opposing emotions. At times the magnitude of her sin returned to plague her. She had allowed him to touch and play with her, and she had taken pleasure in handling that monstrous thing of his. She had even begun to have the most vivid dreams about it, and she woke in confusion, her newly fledged breasts and her private parts burning and itching. As though in punishment for her sins, her breasts had swelled until they strained the buttons of her blouse. She tried to hide them, keeping her arms crossed over her chest, but she had seen the stable boys and the footman looking at them. She wanted to talk to Elise about what had happened to her, and asked her advice, but Meneer van Ritter's had warned her against this, so she kept silent. Then, unexpectedly, Stolz told her, "You are to move to your own room. It is the Meneer's order." Louisa stared at him in astonishment. "But what about Gertruda? She can't sleep alone." "The master thinks it's time she learned to do so. She, too, will have a new room, and you will have the one beside her. She will have a bell to call you if she needs you in the night." The girls' new apartments were on the floor below the library and the Meneer's bedroom suite. Louisa made a game of the move and stilled Gertruda's misgivings. They took all her dolls up and held a party for them to introduce them to their new quarters. Louisa had learned to speak in a different voice for each toy, a trick that never failed to reduce Gertruda to shrieks of laughter. When each of her dolls, in turn, had told Gertruda how happy they were with their new home, she was convinced. Louisa's own room was light and spacious. The furnishings were quite splendid, with velvet curtains and gilt chairs and bedstead. There was a feather mattress on the bed and thick blankets. There was even a fireplace with a marble surround, although Stolz cautioned her that she would be rationed to a single bucket of coal a week. But wonder of wonders, there was a tiny cubicle that contained a commode with a lid that lifted to reveal a carved seat and the porcelain chamber pot under it. Louisa was in a haze of delight as she crept into bed that first night. It seemed that she had never been warm in her life until this evening. She came out of a deep, dreamless sleep and lay awake trying to place what had woken her. It must have been well past midnight, for it was dark and the house was silent. Then the sound came again, and her heart raced. It was footsteps, but they came from the panelled wall at the far side of the room. She was gripped by superstitious dread and could neither move nor scream. Then she heard the creak of a door opening, and a ghostly light glowed out of nowhere. Slowly a panel in the far wall swung wide open, and a spectral figure stepped into the room. It was a tall, bearded man dressed in breeches and a white shirt with leg-o-mutton sleeves and a high stock.
Louisa.
His voice was hollow and echoed strangely. It was just the voice that she would have expected from a ghost. She pulled the covers over her head and lay without breathing. She heard footsteps crossing to her bedside, and she could see the wavering light through a slit in the bedclothes. The footsteps stopped beside her, and suddenly her coverings were flung back. This time she screamed, but she knew it was futile. Next door, Gertrude would be sleeping in a mindless stupor from which nothing short of an earthquake could waken her, and there were only the two of them on this floor of Huis Brabant. She stared at the face above her, so far gone in terror that she did not recognize him even in the lantern light. "Don't be afraid, child, I will not hurt you."
"Oh, Mynheer!"
She flung herself against his chest and clung to him with all the strength of her relief.
"I thought that you were a ghost."
"There, child," he stroked her hair. "It's all over. There's nothing to be afraid of."
It took her a long time to become calm again.
Then he said, "I won't leave you here alone. Come with me."
He took her hand, and she followed him trustingly in her cotton nightdress on bare feet. He led her through the door in the panel. A spiral staircase was concealed behind it. They went up it, then through another secret doorway. Suddenly they were in a magnificent chamber, so spacious that even with 50 candles burning in their chandeliers, the far reaches of the room and the ceilings were in shadow. He led her to the fireplace in which tall yellow flames leapt and twisted. He embraced her and stroked her hair.
"Did you think I had forgotten you?"
She nodded. "I thought I had made you angry, and that you did not like me any more."
He chuckled and lifted her face to the light.
"What a beautiful little thing you are. This is how angry I am and how much I dislike you."
He kissed her mouth, and she tasted the cheroot on his lips, a strong aromatic flavour that made her feel safe and secure. At last he broke the embrace and seated her on the sofa in front of the fire. He went to a table on which stood crystal glasses and a decanter of ruby-red liquor. He poured a glass and brought it to her.
"Drink this. It will chase away the bad thoughts."
She choked and coughed at the sting of the liquor, but then a marvellous glow spread through her, to her toes and fingertips. He sat beside her, stroked her hair, and spoke to her softly, telling her how pretty she was, what a good girl, and how he had missed her. Lulled by the warmth in her belly and his mesmeric voice, she leaned her head on his chest. He lifted the hem of her nightdress over her head, and she wriggled out of it. Then she was naked. In the candlelight, her childlike body was pale and smooth as cream in a jug. She felt no shame as he fondled her and kissed her face. She turned this way and that at the gentle urging of his hands. Suddenly he stood up, and she watched him as he pulled off his shirt and breeches. When he came back to the sofa and stood in front of her, he did not have to guide her hands, and she reached for him naturally. She gazed at his sex as she slid back the loose skin to reveal the shiny plum-coloured head, as he had taught her. Then he reached down, removed her hands, and sank to the floor in front of her. He pushed apart her knees and laid her back on the velvet-covered sofa. He lowered his face, and she felt his moustache tickling the inside of her thighs, then moving higher.
"What are you doing?"
she cried with alarm. He had not done this before, and she tried to sit up. He held her down, and suddenly she cried out and sank her fingernails into his shoulders. His mouth had settled on her most secret parts. The sensation was so intense that she feared for a moment she might faint.